Welcome to the fourth episode of the Judo Edit podcast, where I chat with judo athletes, coaches, and influential people to bring you the behind the scenes of the international judo circuit. And hopefully, I can bring you a little bit of insight that can make your judo better. On this episode, I'm speaking with Tinker Easton, the current Oceania champion at under 52 kilograms, seven-time national Australian champion, competitor at multiple Grand Slam and World Championships, and a household name in Australian judo circles. I've fought and known Tinker since we were both about 11 or 12 years old, and she is legitimately one of the most determined, gritty, and hardworking people I've had the privilege to train with. So, athletes, coaches, and parents, listen closely. Here's Tinker Easton. So, Tinker, how are you going today?
Good, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Really excited to talk to you. So, let's go back to how you began judo. So, you grew up on the south coast of New South Wales.
Yes, that's right.
Okay, so how on earth did you end up in a dojo for the first time?
My brother was doing it, and in 2006, he suggested I come along and have a go. And so I was pretty excited about it. I found the whole thing fascinating. So I jumped on the mat and fell in love, like, straight away.
Awesome. So
yeah,
that first judo session, do you remember, you know, what you did or how many people was there? Was it a kids' class?
Yeah, so it was a kids' class. There was probably about 20 other kids. I don't remember a lot of it, but I remember learning my first throw, which was ogoshi, and just the feeling of throwing someone over me. I was like, that's so cool.
Did you get into many fights with your brother?
Not really, no.
Because I was going to say, would it even the playing field a little bit?
Yeah.
So I suppose if we look at your career highlights so far, you're 21 at the moment.
Yeah.
And last year you won the Asian Open?
Yeah, in Hong Kong.
So I suppose looking back in between when you sort of began judo as a 10-year-old to now, 12 years later, what was your progression between, you know, growing up through the cadet ranks in Australia and then sort of advancing into the senior system?
It sort of just happened. Like, my goal was always just to go out there and fight. You know, when I was a kid, I'd just go out and be like, I want to fight, I want to do my best. And then as that progressed, I started to, like, make goals of, you know, I want to win this competition or I want to beat this person. And I sort of just ended up, you know, getting selected on the Australian team, and it all went from there.
You make it sound ridiculously easy. Like,
it's not.
Even though, like, yeah, it definitely wasn't. I know there's a lot that goes into that.
Yeah.
And at what age did you start setting goals for yourself that you wanted to beat, you know, different people, or you wanted to reach a certain level?
Probably about 12. For the first few years were just, you know, little competitions, but then about 12 I went to my first nationals and started making goals then.
Yeah. And was that a self-directed thing, or was that something your parents taught you to do, or your coach, or?
I think it was a bit of both. My dad was sort of always talking it through with me, so that helped a lot.
Do you remember, you know, what were some of the first goals that you set in judo?
Yeah, I think the first one was just to get a score in a competition. Then later on it was win a fight, and then I think win nationals was next.
Yeah, that's yeah. Awesome. And I suppose as a 12-year-old then, working to meet those goals, how did you sort of approach that? Was it a step-by-step process, or your coach and your dad guide you through?
I'm not really sure. I don't think I really knew what I was doing at the time, so I just went for it.
Yeah, for sure. So you mentioned that you know, you have a brother and your father was sort of the one that was helping you at the outset with judo. Would you mind telling us, you know, what your family life was like growing up and, you know, how your family sort of shaped you?
You know, Dad would take us to judo, would sort of chat in the car on the way about, like, just training and judo in general. I feel like when I started going up to Wollongong for training, you know, I'd spend, like, 2 hours in the car just talking about judo and competitions, and that really helped me get my head around everything, I think.
Yeah. And so do you feel like having your dad there to talk through everything, did that help you grow and understand how to mentally discipline yourself in judo?
Yeah, I think it definitely helped. Having his support, like, to drive me to training in Wollongong or Sydney, and just, you know, it helps with the whole mindset of, yes, we're going here today and we're going to train, and then, you know, go home and do my homework.
Yeah, for sure. If we fast forward a few years, you've gone, done all those years of training, you know, probably thousands of hours of driving up and down the coast. And also lots of thousands of hours of flying. What countries have you sort of been to in the last year?
Last year, it'd be China, Taipei, Japan, Hong Kong, Hungary, Slovakia, Tunisia, Morocco, Austria.
Wow, that is a lot of freaking fire points.
Yeah.
So you fought at, was it the World Championships last year where you fought Erica Miranda?
Yeah, in the second round.
Wow, okay, so for the listeners out there who aren't quite familiar with Erica Miranda, she was at that time the world number one at the 152 kilogram division. And so, Tinka, where were you when you first saw that draw that you were going to fight Erica first, and how did you react?
So I was just sort of in my room and our coach sent us the draws as they came up. So I had Mozambique in the first round.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so I sort of didn't notice that I had Miranda to start with.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't until a little while later that I looked further into the draw and I was like, that's a bit, it's a bit tough. Yeah.
So, okay, so first round, you fought Mozambique. How did that go?
It was good. It was a hard fight, like strength-wise. I didn't end up getting ahead until in the golden score when I got to Azari, but it was a good warm-up fight.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy when you can go to the World Championships and be like, oh, it was a warm-up fight. Then you've sort of gone, looked at the second round and realised that you've got Erica Miranda next. What was going through your head, I suppose, just before that fight?
I remember I was standing behind her in the line and realising that, you know, she wasn't that much bigger than me. Like, you sort of build an idea of people in your head and you're like, they must be so big and strong because they're world number one.
Yeah.
So just sort of realising that she's about my size, and I was like, I'm just going to go out there and give it everything. Like, I've got nothing to lose.
Yeah, that's awesome. And then, actually, why don't you retell the match?
So I just, you know, it started, I just tried to move her around and attack. And I think in the second exchange, I went for a forwards attack and she defended it.
Mm-hmm.
But then I came back and took her backwards. Mm-hmm. I think I surprised her quite a bit.
Yeah.
That's when I got the score.
Yeah.
I think I surprised myself too.
That's awesome. I guess like it really rewards, you know, the training that you've been doing when you realise that you can actually get, you know, Azari is halfway to an Ippon, like,
yeah.
World number one, that's awesome. So what were you thinking, like, I suppose once you finished the match, were you thinking, oh, I could have done this better, I could have done that better, or were you really proud of yourself, or how did you, I suppose, reflect on it?
I was a bit of both. I was happy to have gotten a score and not have just been completely dominated, but at the same time, I was like, I could have done this differently, and, you know, I should have waited longer than forcing attacks and stuff, so it's sort of happy but still critical.
And is that, I suppose, usually the way you'd reflect on a fight? Like, I suppose you finish competition, what's your reflection process?
Yeah, it's always, you know, I look at what I did good and what I did bad and try and figure out like how I could have done things differently to get a better result.
So is that the time where you specifically sort of sit down and, you know, do that by yourself, or is it a chat with your coach? Or
I usually do it by myself first, and then I'll talk to my coach about it later.
I remember sitting at this competition not long ago watching you fight. This is just an Australian competition. I was speaking with one of the volunteers, and he looked at me and said, I don't know why all these girls, bother trying to fight Tinka. She's just too good. I suppose, you know, from where you are at the moment, what would you say to, you know, young girls or young boys who are sort of looking up at the seniors and, like, ridiculously just feel intimidated by, you know, the people they have to fight or the level that they have to reach?
I think it's just important to go out there and give it everything. Like, when you're, like, a cadet or junior and you're fighting a senior, you don't really have anything to lose. Like, it's all just gaining experience, which will help you in the long run. I think you just have to go out there and fight them like you would anyone else.
And I suppose along that vein, your Instagram caption is, you have to have fear in order to have courage. I find that really interesting. How do you define fear and how do you define courage?
I think, you know, fear is something that makes you uneasy or something, I don't know, it makes you a bit uncomfortable and a bit stressed. But I think then to get past that, you have to like accept that, yes, this thing scares me, but it's not going to define how I act. So I'm going to move past it and do it anyway.
Do you have any examples of your past 12 years in judo where you have felt afraid and have had to move past that regardless?
Yeah, I think in 2013, I broke my ankle in a competition.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next year, my first competition back, I had to fight the same girl in the final.
Yeah.
And I just remember being like absolutely terrified because, you know, I'd just come back from this injury and I didn't want it to happen again.
Mm-hmm.
But then I just sort of pushed through and I was like, I can't let that fear stop me from fighting. It's not going to define me as a fighter. I'm just going to go out there and do my best.
That's really awesome. And I suppose, how did your training sort of change when you did that ankle injury?
I think I had, 5 to 6 weeks off where I was on crutches, and then pretty much as soon as I could walk again, I was on the mat doing like the slowest uchikomi ever. I just wanted to get back into it as soon as possible, and you know, so maybe I couldn't do my favorite throw, but then I was working on foot sweeps or just doing what I could to get past it.
Do you feel like retrospectively you've grown from having those injuries?
Yeah, I think definitely grown, and it's definitely helped me to see like how much I want it, like how much I want to do the sport. You know, when you can't do something, you're like, oh, I just want to get back on the mat.
So even the 5 to 6 weeks, you know, before you could get on and do the slowest uchikomi in the world, how did you sort of keep yourself upbeat and sort of focused, or what did you do in that 5 to 6 weeks?
I remember watching a lot of the 101 Nippon videos.
Yeah.
Just sort of like, I guess it probably didn't help all that much because I was like, I just want to get out there and I'm watching all these videos of people doing what I want to do.
Mm-hmm.
But it made me think about like high performance judo and what works for other people. And then I'd go to like my club and just sit on the side and watch the class and pick up what I could.
So you were still sort of really engaged in the training process, even though you weren't actively participating?
Yeah.
I suppose to take a bit of a left turn, if we look at the people who you see as like role models and influences in your life, who are the people that you sort of look up to and learn from the most?
I look up to Melinda Kelmendi a lot.
Mm-hmm.
She's the Olympic champion at under 52 from Kosovo.
Mm-hmm.
I just think if you look at, you know, where she comes from and how successful she's been, it's just really crazy. And like her being the first ever, I think, Olympic champion for Kosovo and first ever world champion.
Yeah.
It's just really inspiring.
That's cool. Okay, what about people, I suppose, within your own team and your own life who've sort of made the biggest impact on you?
I think definitely my parents, always, you know, being there, support me, but not pushing me. Like, you know, they've always been like, if you want to do this, we're going to help you get there. It's also, the moment, my boss has been really helpful with like nutrition and mindset stuff.
Yeah.
That's always good. Like little, like when I'm at work, just having little chats about, you know, how I can improve.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's really good.
Yeah.
With your nutrition, I'm not 100% sure, but are you a vegetarian?
Yes. Yeah.
Would you mind explaining how you approach, you know, maintaining elite performance without eating meat and what your sort of eating philosophy is?
Because I've always been a vegetarian, so it's been, 21 years, it kind of just happens. Like, I don't really know how to explain it.
I suppose from a nutrition point of view, do you have, like, a prescribed diet, or are you pretty flexible? Or?
Just lately I've been working more on a prescribed diet just to work on like getting my weight down to 52.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of, you know, a lot of nutrient dense food, a lot of fresh produce and salads, and eat a lot of eggs. Yeah.
How do you pass the time when you're just about to compete and you're ridiculously hungry and you know you can't eat, you can't drink?
I try and watch like funny movies or TV shows and just keep myself distracted. But I quite often end up on Instagram scrolling through like food posts. Just like, oh, I just really want that right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like you're planning like your after weigh-in sort of food.
Yeah.
Outside of judo, what are the habits and routines which you feel give you an edge in your judo?
Making sure, you know, I stay hydrated all the time, making sure I eat enough for my training, and getting enough sleep is really important. I think, you know, you need to have the energy to train it all the time.
Again, taking another left turn. I'm a big fan of left turns. That you, one of the things that people don't know about you is that you listen to the same song before every fight.
Yes, yeah.
Why is it the same song? And if you don't mind, is that something you'd like to share?
Yeah, so it's called Heart Upon My Sleeve by, I think it's Avicii.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually, like, I went to watch the Paris Grand Slam a few years ago, and that was the song they were playing before every final.
Yeah.
I was kind of listening to it, and I was just like, you know, I want to make it to the finals one day, and, you know, this song just, it reminds me of that.
Yeah.
Sort of pumps me up.
For sure. Even continually reminding you of that goal, hey, even before a small, you know, maybe a small Australian competition, but your mind is, like, at the top.
Yes, focused on the big picture.
If we look back at, like, you know, you've travelled sort of extensively in the last couple of years, well, what have been the highlights of your past few years?
I think definitely the World Championships in Budapest was a highlight.
Mm-hmm.
Just, you know, being in a competition where everyone, like, all the best players in the world are fighting.
Yeah.
And just, like, the environment, the crowd there was really good.
Mm-hmm.
What
set the crowd apart from, you know, the usual competition?
It was just, there was so many people there. A lot of competitions for the early rounds, you know, the stadium will be half empty. But for pretty much the whole competition, it was pretty full.
Yeah.
It was just, everyone was getting really excited.
Yeah. And did you feel that having that atmosphere sort of lifted your game?
I think, yeah, it kind of made me a bit nervous to start with. But then I think halfway through my first fight, it sort of pumped me up.
Mm. Halfway through your fight, why was it halfway through that fight that changed and let you sort of embrace that, having the crowd there?
I think I started to feel a bit more comfortable in the fight. Like, my mind started to settle a bit and be like, I can do this, I can win this.
Yeah.
And that sort of having the crowd in the background just reinforced that.
Mm-hmm. That's cool. Okay, so World Championships at Budapest was a highlight event. What were your other sort of highlights throughout the year?
Definitely winning Hong Kong Open.
Yeah.
That was the last competition of the year, so it really just made it a massive highlight for me. Yeah, I think fighting at Tokyo Grand Slam as well.
Yeah.
So it's got, you know, it's the home of judo, it's massive competition.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember watching you guys fight there and it was insane atmosphere.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, so good. Cool. And so I sort of saw the other day that you posted a picture of your drink bottle that had sort of self-inspiring self-talk on the drink bottle. What's on your drink bottle, Linda? Why did you put it there?
I don't remember what it was then. It kind of changes weekly.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you update your drink bottle with quotes?
Yeah, so it's just like a motivational quote, or like if it's something going on in my life, it's sort of something to, you know, just keep me positive and keep fighting.
That's really cool.
I'm always looking to improve myself and looking to, you know, do better than I did yesterday, or
yeah,
try as hard as I can. I sort of aim for perfection a bit.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
So when you say you always want to be better than you were yesterday, I suppose one of the sort of difficult things about judo is that it's not necessarily measured by a time or And there are so many, you know, variables and influences. It sort of also depends on who you're training with or how you feel on the day. How do you personally assess if you're doing better than you were yesterday or your level of performance on a specific day?
I think that's something that I'm really bad at the moment. Like, I'll get too caught up in, like, if I can't throw anyone that day, I'll be like, I'm doing really bad anyway. It might just be because I'm fighting people who are better than me or stronger than me. So I feel like it's something that I still need to work on, just being able to assess the situation and how I'm fighting within that,
mm-hmm.
being able to feel that I'm improving.
Yeah.
You know, maybe I didn't throw anyone, but maybe I got out of a throw or, you know, I managed to counter them or just trying to pick out the things that I did well and say, yeah, that was a good session anyway.
Yeah. Okay, cool. And so other extreme. What if you walk out of a training session or maybe a competition, you feel like, oh, it hasn't been a great day, or I could have done better, or maybe you were really tired and you didn't perform as well as you would have liked to. What's your personal sort of way of resetting the day and getting your mind back on track?
I'm not that good at that at the moment. So I kind of, you know, look down at myself quite a bit. But, yeah, then after a little while I start to think it through and I'm like, yeah, that wasn't good, but at least, you know, I can improve on something. Maybe I wasn't on top of gripping that day, so, you know, it's something that I need to work on, so I try and learn something from the experience.
Yeah, for sure. So that's always the sort of the general trend, isn't it? Like, high achievers tend to be the harshest critics on themselves.
Yeah, definitely.
And, but yeah, it sort of sounds like, you know, time sort of helps a little bit.
Yeah.
You mentioned before that you're talking about, oh, maybe this part of my judo, like the gripping, was that you weren't quite on top of it. Or I'd be interested to hear, just from the way you approach judo and with your fighting style, what are the sort of elements which you break it down into? Is it like standing and groundwork, or is it like gripping, or is it like, you know, I don't know, how do you approach your system of judo?
Yeah, so I think I'm always looking for the ippon score.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you'll see in some competitions when I might be up a score and I should probably not still be trying to, you know, throw people straight away.
Yeah.
But I'm always sort of focusing on getting that ippon. So sort of look at it, you know, you get a dominant grip and that increases your chances of getting the score. Yeah. And then from there, I'll move on to the groundwork.
And where does that sort of mindset come from when you're like, I'm always going for the ippon?
I think just growing up, that was always like my goal. Like, I always wanted to, you know, do massive throws. And I guess I still really enjoy that feeling of someone going flying over your body and just... You know, you only know halfway through that it's going to be a good score.
Yeah.
Sort of.
Yeah. It's such
addicted.
It's such a weird thing to explain, like, to non-judo people, right?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, I know I've got them. I know this is going to be a massive score. And people are
just, yeah.
What? You actually, like, enjoy that?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So when people, like, just ask you, like, you meet someone new and they ask you, you know, what do you do? How do you explain to them, you know, that you're an athlete and, you know, most people don't know judo. How do you explain judo to them?
Yeah, it's funny. Everyone always looks at me and they're like, you can't be a fighter. You're too small. But, yeah, so I sort of, you know, just say, you know, judo is pretty much you're trying to throw someone who's trying to throw you. Like,
Do you get weird requests like, oh, do a backflip?
No, I haven't got any of those.
Requests to throw people? To demonstrate?
Yep. You get those quite a bit.
Yeah. Have you followed through on any and just done a, you know, impromptu demo?
In high school, I did a couple of times.
Yeah.
But, yeah, not so much now.
Yeah. No. What's the biggest learning experience you've had throughout sort of becoming an athlete?
I think it's just realising, like, how much more you can give. Like, your mind might be telling you that you have to stop and you're exhausted. But, like, just being able to push past that.
Yeah.
I think that's something that I've learned. Like, you know, it might be in the middle of a fight and I'm like, I'm so tired, I can't get up. But then you do and you keep fighting. You know, having that ability to push forwards.
Yeah. So this is a question that one of my favorite podcasters, Tim Ferriss, always asks. What's a favorite failure that you've had in your life or in judo? And I suppose, how did you grow from that?
Losing really early in my first Grand Slam, like in the first 30 seconds or something, was pretty, you know, it was pretty disappointing. Just coming back from it, realizing that sometimes things don't go your way and you can do everything, but you still get caught.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the bigger picture, anyone can win on any day in judo, and it's just accepting that.
Yeah. So almost like a reframing sort of, and like looking at the broader thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's really good. If people want to reach out to you, get in contact with you, or they feel inspired by your story and want to help support you in any way,
yep,
where's the best place for them to reach you?
Probably through Instagram. It's
yep.
Tinker_Rose.
Cool. And yeah, is there anything else that you'd like to sort of, I suppose, pass on as a message to up-and-coming judoka in Australia? Any words of encouragement or wisdom and insight?
I think sort of just, you know, you just got to keep fighting, go in as many competitions as you can, just build up as much experience. Like, you know, if you're a cadet, go in the junior age group as well or the senior age group and just get as much experience and mat time as you can.
Cool. Well, thank you, Tinker, for being on the show. Really appreciate all your time, and it's been wonderful hearing all of your stories.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, yeah. And where can we see you next? Where's your next competition?
Fighting in Ho Ho, China at the end of May for the Grand Prix there.
So we'll keep an eye out for you at Ho Ho.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the fourth episode of the Judo Edit podcast. I hope you got something out of that can help you a little bit in your judo. And make sure to follow Tinker's progress through her Instagram account and support her as she travels around the world representing Australia. For further updates and exciting news about the Judo Edit podcast, give our Facebook page a follow. That's the Judo Edit. If you've been enjoying listening to this podcast and you feel like you've gotten something out of it, I would really appreciate it if you could give it a bit of a share or a like so that I can get more people to listen, which will mean I can get higher quality content and guests for you in the future. Otherwise, keep chasing ippons, and this is Melissa Budiato signing off.